This week on Crime World.
There was a Republican police from 1920. I mean, the IRA was effectively trying to run an underground government. And actually, there was a crime wave. 1919, 1920, there's a wave of bank robberies, post office robberies, robberies of individuals, robberies of pubs in Dublin and in rural areas as well. So the IRA tried to actually clamp down on that. They, on occasion, solving bank robberies and giving the money back to the banks. Now,
I'm Nicola Tallant, and you can listen to my podcast, Crime World, wherever you get your podcasts.
On this week's Big Tech Show, how will the latest developments in artificial intelligence affect your life? Will you get new powerful personal assistants? Are you in danger of something terrible happening? We explain what's going on.
Just a couple of weeks ago, Anthropic, which is OpenAI competitor, their startup lab, actually founded by former OpenAI employees, they actually eclipsed GPT-4 only just a couple of weeks ago with their latest model, and the internet went crazy. This is just better than GPT-4 at everything. So OpenAI had to respond to that.
The Big Tech Show, available on all podcast platforms.
If you like the Indo Daily, you can follow us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Today on the Indo Daily, the downfall of John Delaney.
Imagine the scene. It's Kilkenny, the Mount Juliet Golf Club. There's an ice sculpture of a Walter PPK, James Bond theme everywhere. White ostrich feathers in the centerpieces of the tables. We've got the High Kings, a well-known band, playing, pyrotechnics going off, flames shooting into the air. We've got the high rollers from UEFA there, Alexander Seferin, the president of UEFA, Eamon Dunphy, Martin O'Neill, the Ireland manager, John Giles, the kind of royalty of Irish football, and Put Them Under Pressure comes over the speakers. People stand up and clap. In enters John Delaney. 0050 with his fiancée Emma English on his shoulder, people cheering and whooping like an Irish wedding, you know, as they come to their appointed seats. That's something that the FAI paid for, put on €80,000. Franck, the wedding planner, was the guy organising the whole thing. FAI picked up the tab. Delaney paid them €50,000 back. This is Irish football 2017. The CEO of the FAI be treated like royalty.
Today on the Indo Daily, the downfall of John Delaney.
I came back and on my desk was an envelope addressed to me, and inside there was no letter, but just photocopies of two documents. One was a cheque for €100,000 from John Delaney to the FAI, and the other was a remittance payment from the FAI to John Delaney.
I'm Kevin Doyle, and today on the Indo Daily, I'm speaking to Mark Tighe, journalist with the Sunday Independent and co-author of Champagne Football. Mark Tighe, you can't talk about John Delaney's involvement in the FAI without first going back and talking about his father, Joe.
Yeah, yeah. From people outside Irish football, they probably think it's remarkable that, you know, in 1996, 1995, you had, you know, the FAI treasurer, thrown out of the Football Association of Ireland over a huge ticketing scandal where, you know, hundreds of thousands of punts, as it was back then, were sloshing around in his private bank account and money hadn't been repaid back to the association. He was kicked out, and within 3-4 years, you had his son, John Delaney, as the FAI treasurer, you know, initially as a board member and then as treasurer, you know, basically. And yeah, you could really look at his career through that kind of Shakespearean prism, you know, that his whole career was kind of an attempt to kind of right the wrongs that were done to, he saw as being done to his father, you know, to clear the Delaney name and kind of to also bring about a bit of retribution against those in the FAI who'd deposed of his father.
So how did John Delaney get into those positions? There's a lot of politics in the FAI, always had, every sports organisation, let's be honest. So how does John Delaney become treasurer and write up, I suppose, wasn't it Saipan really where he became a public figure?
Yeah, He initially was a board member of Waterford United, and was through that you know, he was elected onto the FAI board as a board member. He was a businessman, he was an accountant, so people regarded him as having a lot of acumen.
And I ran a bakery for a couple of years. I'll tell you, some of the best principles I've learned came from running that bakery. I remember going down the first week, there was £100,000 owed to the sheriff in back taxes. And the health inspector was in within 2 weeks saying he was going to close the place. So I told the health inspector if he wanted to lose 40 jobs in Kerry, that was his business. He lived in Kerry. and he backed off. And the sheriff, I wrote 10 post data checks out for a year, 10 grand a month. And thankfully, they all cleared. And we made a go of it then.
A lot of people on FAR football boards around the country, you know, local teams, they come from working class backgrounds. So Delaney, being a businessman, who seemed to have had quite a bit of money and success in, you know, logistics businesses that he was running involved in, he was seen as someone that was kind of a breath of fresh air, and he courted the media very well as well. You know, you had even the Sunday Times back in 1999 were saying this is the coming man. He knows his business, he knows how finance works, and they were promoting him, you know, as a, you know, someone who should be in a position of power in the FAI, and he would have courted journalists very much. So that kind of worked to an effect when 2002 came, and, you know, the world's media descended on Dublin. The crisis about our, you know, personally, I'm a big Roy Keane fan, probably the best player in the world at the time, and the Ireland captain getting kicked out of the Irish camp or leaving, depending on which side of that you're going to take. Yeah.
John Delaney of the FAI joins us from our Waterford studio. What's your reaction to that interview?
Well, Roy is obviously very hurt. He sounds very emotional, but we all are. Everybody involved in football, from speaking to people in the hotel in Japan, you know, the players, the management, everybody's hurt about this, by the situation. But it doesn't seem that we can achieve a resolution here, to be fair.
Do you not think it's possible for both sides to be big about this, to forget what's happened, and to go on and continue with the World Cup?
It's difficult to see, given the circumstances. Let's not forget that the meeting in Saipan was emotionally charged. There was a lot of comment made, which we've all read in the papers, and
it's very hard. But it's a week later. I mean, time has passed. Tempers should have cooled. There should be wiser counsel should prevail.
I don't think that's achievable at this stage, to be fair. Again, the transcript of what Roy has said in full, we'll hear it at 8:30. We'll go to the team hotel, but I don't see any change in the attitude, to be straight.
So Delaney, as the media descended on Merrion Square and the FAI headquarters, you had some serious FAI bods there, people, you know, honoree, this, that and the others. But it was John Delaney said, look, lads, I'll handle this. You know, I'll take the questions. I'll handle the media. And he was seen to have done quite well, even to the fact you remember.
Which is unusual because he was the treasurer. He wasn't a front of camera man.
Yeah, like, and you had Des Casey there, you know, who served on the UEFA Exco, his position at the time. He was a senior person on the FAI board. You know, Des is in the background, you know, even though he was kind of a much more experienced person. But John just knew how to handle the media, you know, and he courted a fine line there, like, you know, that this was ridiculous what was happening, but also maintaining, you know, trying to keep the FAI above the fray, saying this is a player manager issue, you know. And he did probably quite well there, and that really launched him. Yeah, from that there on, he was seen as even more the coming man, you know. After the kind of review, the Genesis review, which was commissioned then into the FAI, you know, how we could be so bad logistically and with planning, and, you know, all the deals of, you know, the amateur and the professional clashing. Out of that, we had Fran Rooney, you know, who'd had his own business problems, but he was brought into the FAI, and Delaney would have really backed him and picked him. But working all the as soon as Fran Rooney was in there, Delaney was working against him, and, you know, talking poison into people's ears. And when Rooney was kicked out, you know, John was the man seen to replace him. And that, and so 2004, he became interim CEO of the FAI.
So, as I say, politics in sport, that's not unusual at all in any sense. I think that anyone who's ever been involved in a sporting organization say that sort of thing goes on. But Delaney gets in there, he goes from treasurer to CEO. But the big project at that time was the Aviva Stadium, and he was front and centre of the plan around that.
Yeah, so when he came in, I suppose Aircom Park, if you remember, had been the big FAI's big plan. And then there was talk about the Bertie Bowl, and Delaney was against both of those projects, really, I suppose. And he said, no, what we'll do is, and he backed this plan, you know, that where the FAI had rented Lansdowne Road. He said, no, look, let's be equal partners on this.
You don't have, the one thing I've learned, like, we built the stadium, the Aviva Stadium, when I got involved with the FAI. I think the same business principles apply to any business. So I didn't know how to build a stadium. When you learn the business.
But the deal that they actually did was, while they're equal partners on the Aviva Stadium, they're still leasing the land from the IRFU, and it'll revert back to their control at the end of the stadium. But it meant then that the FAI, and this kind of sowed the seeds of his downfall eventually, was that the FAI took on a huge amount of debt to finance their half of the project. You know, the final figures on it you think it was around 70 million, which is a huge amount of money for the association to take on back then. And Delaney kind of brought in these outside experts saying, you know, we can charge €12,000 for season 10-year season tickets. They were the base amounts they were charging, over 30,000, you know, way in advance, way above what the IRFU were seeking for similar kind of season
tickets.
And where
was this in the timeline of the economy? Because obviously we had the Celtic Tiger when that might have washed, but then as we moved into 2010-11 onwards, those kind of prices were just not realistic for the corporate world.
Yeah, they were launching these in September 2008. So in and around the time that everything was just, the world was collapsing, the financial world was collapsing. You know, they had a launch down in the Watermark building in Ringsend, you know, where you could see the Aviva Stadium still being built in the background. Delaney famously said, look, there's 33,000 millionaires in Ireland. We just have to tap up a few of them, you know, and we'll be grand, lads. Despite, you know, and this showed the weakness of the FAI board, you know, who'd already been there, most of them from 2004, 2005, and 2008, 2009, they were like, a lot of them had big doubts about this thing. These are ridiculous high levels to be charging, you know. And Delaney started pushing them to say, you know, get your affiliates, get your leagues, get your teams, get your clubs to buy these tickets for us, because no one else is buying them. And, you know, the FAI board could have said, actually, Don, this isn't working, you know. But John said, look, this is the deal we've agreed. We've got the experts. Are we going to, you know, go with the advice or not? You know, these are the guys we're paying the big money for. And the board were cowed, and that, you know, they were cowed forever, you know, and that was, but that was a big jumping off point, you know. From then on, Delaney was always playing catch up financially.
Did he become a little bit untouchable by that, though? Because in the business sense, most people could see it wasn't a good deal. You're saying the other people on the board and involved with the FAI kind of knew this wasn't going to wash. It wasn't going to be sustainable. And yet, John Delaney carried on.
Yeah, he always would put out this line, debt-free by 2020. You know, so for over a decade, this is the line, you know, when journalists, on the few times that he would engage with football and, you know, business journalists, that was the line he'd give.
It's 2022, how are they?
Well, you could, the most recent deaths was at the FAI AGM a few weeks ago. I think they're at about 64 million. So they're not debt-free. Like, you know, what they've done, you know, the jump ahead is that the current board have realised, look, we were racing and paying these huge interest rates to try and pay off by 2020, which is never actually going to happen with the finances. And we're borrowing from advanced from money coming in from the future, our future income. And they said, no, let's put this off till 2040. So, you know, it's now they're hoping that the Aviva debt will eventually be paid off around 2041, 2042, you know. So that's a more realistic financial plan.
Give me a rundown, Mark, of some of the other controversies then that followed around this. Some serious, some less so in terms of John Delaney's tenure at the FAI and even some of his engagement with the fans, for example.
Yeah, I suppose as a football fan myself, I remember vividly going out to Sopo, going out to Poland, where the Poland and Ukraine were hosting the Euro 2012. It was the first time Ireland had qualified for a major tournament since the Japan-Korea World Cup, you know, where Delaney, you know, I'd been out there as a finance person, as a treasurer. So 2012, we had Trapattoni as a manager. Ireland, like, I was sickened myself as a football fan. You know, we lost all three of our games.
I was at all of them.
Yeah, so I departed by the time of the Italian game, but I saw the first two. It was so disheartening as a fan. But I remember Delaney going around the squares in Sopo and in
Gdansk and Poznan.
Poznan was, yeah. Poznan. Yeah.
And it's all a blur, if I'm honest, yeah, that whole period.
Yeah. I just, you know, there was this chant, you know, Delaney, he used to be a wanker, but he's all right now. I was like, what's this about? You know, why are they extorting? And John was loving this. You know, you could see they were putting open on the shoulders. There's a famous night in Sopo, which is just outside Gdansk, kind of a party town, a beach town. And, you know, Delaney was clearly drunk, lost his shoes.
I'm sorry,
they did their best.
I remember, like, we'd be in a pub, you know, at a bar, you know, before or after a match, and the word would go around, Delaney's buying pints next door, like, run for it, like, you know, you get free drink. And so he was splashing the cash left, right and centre, kind of. And like, Ireland were a disaster, but Delaney was kind of, I know, ingraining himself with a certain cohort of fans.
To my shame, as a journalist who was there covering that, the fans for the Evening Herald at the time, I remember being tasked by a news desk to go and try find John Delaney's shoe. That was the level of craziness that was around him as a celebrity, I guess, rather than the boss of a football organisation that was doing horrendously badly at that tournament.
Yeah, and like we detail this in our book, which I wrote with Paul Rowan, Champagne Football, how Delaney was confronted by the senior FAI board members after the disaster of 2012, Euro 2012, you know, where they were saying, you know, your drunken behaviour was just unacceptable, you know, and, you know, a lot of CEOs would have been sacked just, you know, not just by the team's performance, but his own personal performance. And, you know, like he had John Delaney, this is interesting background, you know, into his whole financial disaster, his personal financial disaster. And that, you know, at the time he was separating from his wife, Emer, and Susan Keegan, who comes into the story later, his then girlfriend was out there and kind of, something that was kind of kept on the down low, which some FAI staff are seeing are in and around matches. But, you know, Delaney was confronted post Poland and he, you know, stood up for himself, you know, like, lads, I'll get you, you know, you won't get me. This is my FAI. And again, that was a moment where the board could have stood firm, but they didn't. And, you know, I remember speaking to directors subsequently, and it was only two of the board that went and confronted him, and they didn't even inform other board members. So there was a lack of communication among the board, you know, that other board members said, look, I would have supported the guys if they told me they were confronting John at that stage, but they only learned about it years later, you know. So it's unfortunate, I suppose, that the board were acting in, you know, little cliques.
And I suppose it's well documented, Mark, by your own book indeed, but in the papers at this stage, and it's funny even looking back now, but like the list of controversies, there was the wage cuts that came in 2012, the 10% for staff and the FAI as well.
When John was on €430,000, like making him probably the best paid football CEO in the world.
The €5 million that the FAI got from FIFA over the Thierry Henry thing to kind of make it go away.
Mm-hmm. We felt we had a legal case against FIFA because of how the World Cup hadn't worked out for us with Henry Handball. Also the way Blatter behaved, if you remember, on stage, having a snigger at us and having a laugh at us. So that day when I went in and told him how I felt about him, and there were some expletives used, we came to an agreement. And that was a Thursday, and on Monday the agreement was all signed and all done. It's a very good agreement for the FAI, a very legitimate agreement for the FAI. I'm bound by confidentiality for naming the figure. You've put a figure out there,
right?
And fair play to you.
What was the agreement?
Well, it was a payment to the association. Not to proceed with a legal case.
All right.
Was singing rebel songs in a pub in 2014. The controversy over the treatment of the women's football team, which thankfully seems to have improved a hell of a lot now, but at the time, the whole idea of them having to get changed in public toilets and having to hand back tracksuits, all that. There was the controversy over the Rio Olympics. He was never found to have done anything wrong, but his name became part of that story around the tickets controversy in Rio. So there was all those. Was there any achievements in his term as CEO?
Yeah. Like when Delaney came in 2004, 2005, you know, like speaking to people who become his mortal enemies, like the Professional Football Association of Ireland, you know, who would always stand up for, you know, League of Ireland players and their rights. They were quite impressed with him. And even, you know, directors who became, you know, enemies of him maybe down the line, they thought initially he was doing things for the right motivations. You know, like they brought in a standard player contract for League of Ireland footballers. So that meant, you know, whether you're playing for Shamrock Rovers or Finn Harps or, you know, a team in the first division, that you'd get your basic rights, you know. And so, look, football in Ireland, being a professional footballer or a semi-professional footballer, it's a very hard job in terms of your rights. So there's something to protect footballers. Like, that was something that I know the PFAI were, you know, they've been lobbying for years. And when Delaney came in, he made it happen. So, you know, that's one of the good things he did. Looking like, you know, our record, we qualified for two European championships. You know, Delaney helped. Now, in fairness, he was one of the people he can proudly describe himself, and he has, you know, said, you know, that was my brainchild along with from the Scottish Football Association to expand the Euros to 24 teams from previous 16. So that meant it was easier for teams like Ireland to qualify. So, and that has, you know, benefited a lot of smaller countries. But I think, like, if you look at Ireland's financial or the FAI's financial performance and the team's performance and the League of Ireland performance, it was a disaster. You know, we fell from being just outside the top 10 in the world of the men's team to being, you know, where we're now, I think, in the 40s, you know. So, and if you look at the structures that are there, and, Delaney belatedly brought in a national structure for youth teams linked with League of Ireland teams. So I think that's a positive, you know, but it was very late in the day that he did that. That should have been there. He should have done that in the noughties, you know, but he brought that in the last couple of years. So I think there are things he can credibly put down as achievements.
It's a bit like being a football manager. Sackings or the downfall comes slowly and then all of a sudden. So you've spoke about his relationship with the media, and I think it's fair to say at this remove that more than myself saying going around trying to find his shoe in Poland was a bit ridiculous now in hindsight. I think people knew there was a lot of unease within the FAI, within football, that there was a lot of things happening that left people uncomfortable, that seemed wrong. It's very hard to report in a lot of that without evidence in this country. Mm-hmm. Maybe it had partly to do with his relationship with the media. He obviously used defamation laws a lot to try and ensure that there was little or no bad publicity about him. And then, Mark, you opened the Pandora's box. How did you find the box?
Yeah, well, I'd been asked to write a profile on him. I think it was around 2012. And I started doing a bit of digging into his personal finances. And there was a company he was involved in called JMPHE, involved in building. So John and his business partners had built this housing estate down in Carrick-on-Suir. And just thought it was interesting that he had all these side projects and kept them going while he was CEO on this huge amount of money. And as you do as a journalist, sometimes you just, I was digging around the land registry and I noticed that some of the mortgages from JMPHE had been transferred to this new company called Pillarview. Very mysterious company. John had no on the record connections with the company, but it was, when I looked into it, it was run by two close friends of his, a Garda and a soldier, who were big into their local football teams, one in Tipperary, one in Kilkenny. And so we published a story on that, and little was out to know the Pillarview would become central to the ongoing Garda investigation into John's finances. It was March 2019 then when I'd been covering Dennis O'Brien Business Post case for a couple of weeks. I came back and on my desk was an envelope addressed to me, and inside there was no letter but just photocopies of two documents. One was a cheque for €100,000 from John Delaney to the FAI, and the other was a remittance payment from the FAI to John Delaney. And so that's it started
an anonymous tip. It's like the movies.
Well, yeah, like I was intrigued, as you say. You know, there've been a lot of people talking about, you know, the culture of fear in the FAI, you know, how John Delaney dealt with people who would dare speak out about him. You know, and there was a lot of suspicion about this, you know, debt-free until 2020, that it would ever happen. But there'd never really been a leak from inside the FAI before into what was actually happening in there. So I thought, Jesus, this is someone now who's trying to point me in the right direction on this. I did my digging and we found, you know, I was able to verify that this transaction actually happened. And then all of a sudden, you know, that took us over 2 weeks to kind of get to a situation in the Sunday Times where we were happy to print. Published the story, and you know, I'd approached Delaney and the FAI like that day on March 1st, but it was March 16th then, the day before. March 17 was a Sunday, and we were about to go to print, and next thing John Delaney's lawyers were telling us we're in the High Court now seeking an ex parte injunction against the Sunday Times and you personally, Mark Tye. And thankfully, like Frank Fitzgibbon, the editor, who's now gone from the Sunday Times, you know, took the very brave decision, you know, because he easily could have folded. I think a lot of editors down the years maybe have folded when Delaney picked up a phone to a lawyer and engaged the legal battalions. But, you know, Frank said, no, let's fight this. Myself and Hugh Hannigan, the legal manager in Times newspapers, you know, literally, we raced down the quays in a taxi and then literally on foot, shaking at the gates, then try and get the G4 security guy to open the door and let us in at 6 o'clock on a Saturday. And then we started a 3-hour hearing, you know, where Delaney was trying to say that we pilfered his family law records from his divorce case with his wife. And we were saying, look, this is purely a public interest story, Judge. And thankfully, Judge Anthony Barr ruled in our favour around, I think it was 9:20. And we just managed to get the story into print. And yeah, that was kind of I wouldn't say it was a deck of cards, but over the coming days and weeks, his position and the story kind of unraveled and more whistleblowers came forward to me.
And from there, then it became an issue for the politicians because the Oireachtas got involved. TDs wanted to know what was happening with the finances of the FAI. Why was Delaney involved in loans or money being paid back and forth? the ODCE got involved. Just give us the brief synopsis of everything that has happened since that story, because ultimately John Delaney went slowly. He became executive vice president.
Yeah, within 7 days after our story, Ireland were playing Gibraltar. It was quite dramatic again. Like, it was crazy. On the following Saturday, so the Ireland team is out, you know, in this rocky outcrop, you know, in the south of Spain, playing Mick McCarthy's first, in a second coming of Mick McCarthy, his first competitive match against Gibraltar. And, you know, all these rumours started to fly around. In the meantime, I've met a whistleblower who's given me so much detail on Delaney's personal finances and his, you know, ins and outs of finance with the FAI. And we're about to run a story saying that the FAI had been secretly paying his rent for at least a decade, you know. So something that had never been exposed before when Delaney was on these huge, you know, annual salaries.
And that's very tangible for people, because it's one thing talking about 70 million euro debts and Aviva stadiums and corporate packages. It's very tangible. If someone pays your rent, you're like, that's a sweet deal.
Yeah. And like at the time, you know, SIP2 and, you know, other non-SIP2, non-union staff in the FAI have been facing massive pay cuts, you know, and people have been let go. And all the while, Delaney was getting this secret deal, you know, from the FAI, which, you know, we were later to discover, you know, hadn't really been sanctioned and was being paid, you know, despite it not being in his contract. It's just bizarre. So people were being let go. People were, you know, who were on, you know, just above minimum wage were getting pay cuts while Delaney was getting, you know, paid. The FA were paying for a mansion that was owned by Grainne Shoiga out in Wicklow. You know, it's just bizarre that the FAI were involved in this. That's where, you know, your football money was going. So, you know, I remember Cathal Durbin, who'd become the FAI press officer, had this great plan that let's release this, that John is transitioning from CEO to executive vice president. They wanted to release it like a bomb when they're in midair. He was going to send the signal from the runway to another FAI press officer, send out the press, release the dogs, you know. But it didn't work he thought that would take the heat off Delaney. And, you know, the Oireachtas came in and Delaney really disgraced himself, you know, refusing to answer questions. The FAI treasurer, you know, who was a 70-year-old retired Garda who, you know, didn't have the financial acumen to be treasurer, but he'd been there. When people saw, he didn't know how many bank accounts there were. You know, he thought there was one when there was, was there in the 20s now. It was far more than one, and he didn't know, you know, and I think that's when the scales fell from a lot of people's eyes. You know, John still had his support. People were attacking me, you know, why are you chasing this good man? So at that weekend after the Oireachtas hearing, he was put on gardening leave. Since then, like the ODCE, now called the Corporate Enforcement Authority, which has Gardaí's sanctioned, they've been investigating since March 2019, so that's coming on 2.5 years. Now they got a search warrant from a district court judge, and they seized 250,000 emails from the FAI servers and some hard copy documents. We're awaiting John has fought a protracted legal battle, John Delaney and his lawyers, to keep a lot of those records, over 1,000 records under legal privilege. He's saying he can't touch that stuff. You know, there's legal advice, it relates to my divorce, it relates to my JMPHE, Pillar View, all these companies coming back into it. And so we're waiting for Judge Leonie Reynolds, who's a daughter of Albert Reynolds, who's a High Court judge. We're waiting for her to rule on whether the guards and the ODC, it's heard the Corporate Enforcement Authority now, can get access to those records. And so that's an ongoing white collar crime investigation, which hasn't finished. And, you know, and John Delaney's continuing to work in London. We know he's got a new baby at the age of 54, a new girlfriend. He's working as a kind of a business consultant in London. He's sadly lost his mother in recent weeks. So he was at his mother's funeral there, kind of his first public appearance in Ireland really since 2019. So that's kind of the state of play as we talk now.
That was Mark Tye, Sunday Independent journalist and co-author of Champagne Football. I'm Kevin Doyle, and today's episode was produced by Mary Carroll and Siobhan Maguire, with sound by Gavin Hennessy. Archive clips were from The Saturday Night Show with Brendan O'Connor on RTE and independent.ie. If you enjoyed the Indo Daily, don't forget to like, follow, and leave us a review.